This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
I am Wong Xiaoning, and this is the Breakfast Grill. Sedania Innovator Berhad, an ace lizard company, has had a bit of a bumpy ride in the last 3 years, with only 1 year showing a profit. So today, we are speaking to Dato' Azrin Mohamad Noor, the managing director and founder of this technology company, to find out if the company is finally on track to achieve sustainable profits, whilst also looking in detail at the business segments which range from fintech, sharing telco platforms, IoT, green tech, and also big data. Now, welcome, Dato'. A lot of business segments within the group. But, you know, it's not your first time on the Breakfast Grill. You were here last in July 2017. So let's have a look at how the last 2.5 years have been for Sedania. Not so kind, right? From 2018 numbers, a loss of 4.3 million here. What happened?
Well, you know, that's the thing about technology and changing consumer behavior. I think we're at a time where consumers are a little bit more fluffier, a little bit more, a little bit more choosy and fickle-minded at the same time. And that's why, you know, when we originally started, we called ourselves a technology empowerment company. Then we got to better understand consumer behavior, and we decided, you know, that actually the best way to actually understand changing, fast-changing consumer behavior is to be a lot more innovative. So we reposition the way we see things and call ourselves an innovation house more than the technology. So it's a lot more understanding consumer behavior, using innovation to attend to it, and technology as a basic structure in terms of how to support that understanding.
But what's the reason for the loss, though, for the 4.3 million loss last year? I mean, some of it is, of course, from your annual report, I read trade and finance lease receivables that you have to write off to the tune of 2.8 million ringgit. What's that all about?
Well, actually, at that point in time, we had some investments in the green tech space. That requires, you know, we do a lot of EPC contract, energy performance contract, where we help companies to save money, specifically electricity consumption. And some of those requires a little bit more investments, and the collections did not come at the time where it was to be collected. That's basically it. And I think because of the challenging economic times, it does have an impact on some of our other business verticals as well. So compoundingly, it just contributed to that. But we've learned from that. We've actually put in strategies to make sure that we attend to it, and we are a lot stronger. And as you can see, this year we're growing steadily back again, getting back on our footing, because we learned from that as a lesson.
Okay, but is there going to be any other further write downs in your company? The reason why I'm asking this is like the value of any of your subsidiaries, in particular the Sedania Al Salam Capital.
Right.
Because let's rewind a little bit here, right? You acquired, or Sedania acquired, this Sharia-based fintech company for 12 million. Mm. Now, it was a RPT, right? A related party transaction. Yeah.
The company was owned by Sedania as a company, the private entity, Sedania Corporation. And the business actually grown steadily. But we knew that the fintech space was going to grow really, really big. And for the listed entity to have an entry point into that, we found that it makes it a lot more quicker entry point to the fintech ecosystem by having that as a platform. Rather than organic growth and all that. And because of that, right now, we have close to, 50 FSIs, including cooperatives and banks and high purchase companies who are using the platform. And we've done that B2B business bit now. And we've started to also learn and realize in the ecosystem that there's a huge space beyond what it was built in the first place to go and attend to a B2C business.
Now, SAC, when you acquired it, there was a profit guarantee given, right, mm-hmm. of 1.5 million That's for right. 2017 and 2018. And basically, that was on the basis that the company should make at least 1.5 million ringgit also net profit. Yeah. So for the last 2 years, I noticed, fortunately for you, The last 2 years, SAC just scraped through that hurdle. So for 2017, it made 1.53 million. And then for 2018, it made 1.57 million.
Right.
So what's it going to be like in 2019? What can we expect? Or will suddenly profits fall below 1.5? Because there isn't that profit guarantee anymore.
I think if you look at the performance of SAC now, they've grown the platform from FSIs. I think when it was started, it was below 40. Now it's close to 50 platform. But like all services, you know, when it was, you know, there was a time when personal financing was at its peak and you know, there's a lot more numbers and transactions going through that platform. It was doing well. But like any, you know, any impact on the economy, when it goes down, banks don't give out too much loans, consumers don't come and ask for loans, then obviously the platform is impacted.
So will it hit 1.5 million then this year for 2019, or at least actually show some growth?
I think it will be very positive. But I can tell you right now that it has grown steadily. We're very excited about the B2C platform that we launched, which is rcd.com. So on the left side, well, we've put the platform onto the banks, and the banks now, well, they've been providing this service to their customers. We've helped the bank to grow that business as well by creating a B2C platform on the right side, which helps, on one end, any customers who wants to go and borrow money, basically, will have this platform who will understand your KYC, really gauge your appetite against what kind of facility that you need. And because our platform is at the banks on the left side, we'll be able to do that matching.
Okay.
So when we send those clients to the banks, it will actually be very, very warm leads, quality leads. It will save the banks a lot more cost of acquisition in terms of getting more clients. On the client side, they'll have better access to financing and a lot quicker.
Okay, hang on to that thought, because we're going to come back to that fintech space.
Okay.
But I want to talk about receivables, you know, because, you know, we have to ask about that. And 2018 annual report shows 12 million of trade receivables. So is there a possibility that we will see a repeat of write-offs in 2019? Are these trade receivables lumpy? Because I looked at your annual report and there are four customers. They account for more than half of it, for 6.8 million. So, you know, is there a possibility here?
No, I think we understand about the trade receivable problem. I think we've already factored some of the stuff that we've written off. That's done.
Okay.
So now it's clean times moving forward. We're actually engaging our guys to have better, account management with our clients to make sure that the cash flow is a lot better. And you'll see a lot of improvements in that space. You know.
So we are unlikely to see any trade write-downs in 2019?
We don't anticipate any of that.
And because four customers account for 6.8, which is more than half of your revenue, would you say you are too concentrated in terms of your customers? Are you sufficiently diversified?
And that's the reason why we're creating other verticals too. Specifically, there is a lot more in the energy saving space because those contracts are lumpy contracts. And that's why, you know, we've understood about how, while you have lumpy contracts, you have to mix it with the transactional-based business that we have. And now we're also looking at how to marry that mix to have that right balance, you know. So when we look at our business, you have your high transaction, high margin business that gives us that base. Then you have that lumpy contract, you know, okay margins, but you'll have that risk of some of that receiver problem. So we're balancing that at the moment right now, and we've appointed somebody in our team to have a dedicated job to just make sure the account management and the cash flow is a lot more improved. Yeah, so
it should be a much better year.
Much better year. Yeah.
And then if we look back, I mean, the roller coaster ride with your numbers, right? So, you know, the track record isn't great, I'll be honest. Like we discussed earlier, 4.3 million loss last year, and before that there was a profit, 1.5 for 2017. And then in 2016, it was a loss, you know, so it's a bit of up and down, you know. Why?
Well, I think when we started, we were a technology company. And I think with technologies, there'll be great technologies that will translate, and there will some that will be misses. And I think that's the behavior of most. And I think in that learning curve, I'm quite excited about the lessons that we've learned, and I'm quite excited about the strategies that we put in from those lessons So, that cyclical, I wouldn't want to come out and say that it's a trend that will continue. I think you learn to walk and fall before you can actually learn how to run properly. And I think we've done the falling and walking up. But that's not to say if I find a new technology that I think is exponentially high potential, high growth, that I will not come into it.
Cost management one of the lessons you learned? Because, let's be honest, you can't control your top line growth. But perhaps there's one element where you have some control over, and that's cost, and that's where management skills can really make a difference.
Well, to be fair, our cost management is not the problem that I think the company is going through. I think the one that we've learned was when we started with transactional business base, we found that, as a listed entity, investors wants to see how you go from 1x to a 5x and a 10x. So we knew with transaction, you can never go from a transaction 1x to a 10x. You have to do the revenue mix. And that's exactly what we did. But the risk that comes with that is that, you'll have some receivable problems, right? So it's not the cost part. It's so when the receivable problems comes in and when there is a change in economy where some of those businesses are impacted, so compoundingly, it will have that.
So you think you're lean enough in terms of your, your headquarters costs, all that?
I'm very particular about that as an entrepreneur.
Which is why I was going to ask you because, even during these tough times, right? Sedania paid more salaries to the director's remuneration. That increased by 15% in 2018 from 1.6 million to 1.8 million. Why? And at the same time, you cut salaries to staff from 4.4 million to 4 million, a drop of 10%. So not everyone seems to be sharing the pain.
No. Actually, to be fair, the board has been with us for the longest time. And we have a very, very experienced board members, as you can see. So that jump was approved by the shareholders. It was just a small jump. With regards to the staff costs, it wasn't that we were cutting costs. We found that in order for us to prepare ourselves for better growth, we realized that we actually have to have greater talent pool. And that was what we made a conscious decision to just, take a dip so that we can actually go and grow.
And with that, is the worst over? Just a simple answer, yes or no, Dato?
Yes.
Okay, hold on to that thought, Dato, because we are going to come back to that in a minute. You're listening to The Breakfast Grill, where I'm speaking to Dato Azrin Mohamad Noor, Managing Director and Founder of Sedania Innovator Berhad. After we come back, we are going to dissect each business segment in detail and ask if the company has way too much on its plate. BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
BFM 89.9, welcome back to The Breakfast Grill, where I'm speaking to Dato Azrin Mohamad Noor, Managing Director and Founder of Sedania Innovator Berhad. Earlier, we were talking about the company's difficult 2018 and asking very simply, is the worst over? So, Dato, you said, yes, the worst is over. So let's continue this conversation about the future.
Right.
And if indeed the worst is over, let's look at the original business, all right? I think that was the airtime sharing. Significant contributor to 2018 revenue, about 32%. Now, is sharing platform a dying business? Like newspapers?
Well, I don't think sharing platform is a dying business. If you look at the millennials, they don't like to buy, they like to use. So it's not the sharing platform which is a problem. It's the type of commodity which is going to be changing. So when the sharing platform was initially built, it was to attend to this demand for airtime and credit.
But now you can send money so easily. I mean, if I rewind like 10 years, 15 years ago, sharing airtime was quite common, especially with the foreign workers, let's be honest, and in the prepaid segment. But in the last few years, there's been a shift towards postpaid. And now you can send money quite easily also. So, there still relevance to this?
So exactly the point. So the commodity is it went from just airtime. Now you can share currency. In the future, you should be able to share cryptocurrency too. Likewise, in the mobile space, you originally use airtime and credit.
So
now
evolved.
It's database.
Yeah.
So it's the same thing. How would you wish that if you subscribe to an unlimited data, I have very limited data, I've run out, you don't finish your data, wouldn't you be able to monetize the remainder of that and then share it with me? Because I'd like to use it and I'll pay you.
But have you made those changes? Because if I look at the revenue, right, it's been declining. So it was for this sharing platform business, it was 5.7 million in 2017. And then it was 3.92 million in 2018. And even just for the 6 months of this year, it's 1.2 million. So if I analyze it, it's just 2.4.
Yeah, so sharing platform that's currently available at telcos now is the airtime. That's not a focus for us. In terms of airtime as a commodity to share,
It's a structural decline.
Yeah, exactly. So, but we won't stop the service because it's still generating revenue, but it's not A4P.
Okay, let's talk about the Islamic fintech, which I think you're very excited about that. It's a big business for you.
Very.
What's the expectation there? Because I do see much more competition in this space. Not necessarily because you are the only Sharia platform out there, right?
Mm-hmm.
But there are the larger fintech boys, Ringgit Plus, iMoney. They also have Islamic financial product sections now. So how are you competing with them?
So one thing that I wanted to highlight is this. Fintech space is big now and growing, not just in Malaysia, but globally. But you know, there are two types of fintech. It's either collaborative fintech or disruptive fintech. In the disruptive fintech, you barely find any company that's making any profit. In the collaborative fintech, there are some. And we are in the collaborative fintech. If I zone in a little bit more, in the collaborative fintech, you have the conventional type of banking or financial service, if you might call it, and then you have the specific with the Sharia compliant. We now are quite proud to tell people that we are actually the biggest in the Sharia compliant fintech space. And the special USP that we're very proud about is when we decided to enter into this market, we learned that the services that was available who claims to be Sharia compliant is only Sharia compliant in this country. But it's not Sharia compliant outside of Malaysia. And I found that to be funny. So when we built this platform, it was a pain point. And we realized that the accreditation cannot come only from this country.
Also launched the new Acidic.com with a new CEO.
So the Acidic platform that we've built all this while that's being used by close to 50 FSIs are the ones that is like a B2B service. So as a B2B service, people don't see us. It's a technology partnership. So when you go to, for example, MBSB or RHB and you want to borrow money, if you use a Sharia PFI, they will do the transactions, but people don't see us. They just use our service, right? That is the business that we are in at the moment right now. Our FSIs are happy and we're happy. We're generating a lot of income.
Would you then be interested in actually getting a digital banking license? Because Bank Negara is issuing some framework very soon, or consultative paper on it. So is this something you're looking at doing?
It's funny that you mentioned that because we were just having that discussion last week. I'm mixed in terms of view because while a conventional banking is a lot easier to regulate, what we fathom as a digital banking per se may not necessarily be that form of financial services that will be subscribed by consumers of the future. And therefore, the conundrum. Do I then go and pursue what the regulators think is a service of a future, or should I just be very consumer-based? So to answer your question, we're still having a lot more thoughts into it and discussions into it.
Okay, let's talk about the IoT business because that was quite a disaster in 2018. It looks set to be in the doldrums again because there's no earnings I see for 2019. And this is because you're not supplying any smart fire alarm systems under the Automatic Fire Monitoring System project, right? Or SPKA. So can we consider this SPKA project dead? I mean, is it completely in the water?
It's a great product. But I think because of the transition change in government, there was a pause button, not a stop button. There was a pause button to that as a service. On our end, the product is still superb. The buildings need it. The consumers need it. We just have to get around in terms of execution and how to get the things, you know, restarted again.
And let's talk about big data, because that's another division you have, which had two consecutive years of losses. So what happened to this big data analytic partnership with Cloudera? I've read somewhere that their business model is also in a bit of a structural decline since the public cloud seems to be the future today rather than on-premise deployment.
So data analytics, big data analytics in my opinion, is a great thing of the future, especially in this country. When we first started, we spoke to 50 decision makers of big companies. So they are at a space where I think I need it, but I don't know how to.
I agree with you. I think big data is definitely the way to go. But there is this question whether the platform that Cloudera is in is the right platform.
Well, I think...
Because now everybody's saying it's the cloud, right? And business for Cloudera wasn't that great. They merged with Hortonworks. And yeah, I think the share price has been struggling. So is this something you're still going to pursue?
So at the moment right now, it's a pause button. I think big data analytics is a thing of the future, but I think it needs a lot more education. It takes a lot longer gestation. And that's why we looked at what are the other alternatives to that. And we found that the next biggest thing that if you're late, you're going to miss it. But if you're too early, you'll be burned is esports.
Yes, which is actually my next question, Dato, because I know that's a new venture. But why esports? Are you just jumping on the latest trend here?
No.
Tell me about it.
That's not it. I mean, just so that you know, we announced that we were going to start our esports business before the budget was announced, before the budget said we're going to double the allocation to 20 million, right? I think that's validation in terms of how we are at least ahead of time in terms of understanding where the real growth are. But I also am quite positive the fact that the government now starts to understand. I think there's a lot more education needed about esports because it is at the moment in the eyes of the old or the wise, they think it's just a game. But if you get immersed yourself, you'll know that it is an industry that is actually the quickest entry point to being part of a global digital citizen. This will funnel all of them onto ESPL as a platform. So the trick is, it's like a Facebook. You come in and you play for free.
Okay, so is it selling then?
It's a premium model. Okay. Premium model. So they come on board. So they create a passport. Then they can start building themselves. They start finding teammates, finding components, finding tournaments, and they play against each other. They start building out a rapport.
And then you'll be selling, in a way, advertising space within it.
Advertising is much later. Premium, what I'm talking about is as they get a lot more from casual to a lot more competitive, when it comes to a certain level of competitive, that's when you're starting to become a little bit more hardcore. Mm. That's when you start to see that I'm closer to realizing my dream of being a world champion or representing my country or playing in a pro league. Then you'll start to say, we have mentors, we have training, we can have access to marketplace, you can have a lot more engagements, you can attend forums. So that's when you start to monetize them. It's a B2C model as a start.
Just want to ask a final question on strategy for the Sardinia Innovators, the whole company. It seems like you have a lot of segments and a lot of JVs along the way, right? So if I look at 2017, you bought SASC. Then in 2018, two JVs in the green tech space and another one in 2019 to enter the renewable energy space to build and deploy micro hydro installations in Malaysian rivers. And of course, what we just discussed, which is esports. Now, what is the synergy in all of this for the company? Is there any? Does it seem to be too much on your plate?
It's not too much on the plate. Like I said from the start, we have always been excited about consumer and changing consumer behavior. And if you look at all of the stuff that we started in investing, it's all actually, at the end of it, it's all about wallet share to the consumers.
On that note, thank you for your time today, Dato' Azrin. We wish you all the best in the new ventures. I'm Wong Xiaoning for The Morning Run, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.